I want to start today with a premise that might sound a little dramatic.
Okay.
But looking at this massive stack of research papers, press releases, and honestly, some very angry forum posts we have here, I think it's justified.
Let's hear it.
I think the internet, as we functionally know it, changed fundamentally in the last 24 hours.
That is a big claim. I mean, we hear the internet is changing every other week. But, you know, when you actually line up the news cycle from yesterday, the structural pieces are there. It's not just an update.
No.
It feels more like a shift in, like, the physics of it all.
Right. Because for, what, 30 years, the internet has been what we call a pull economy. Mm. We go to a browser, we type a query, we search, we do the legwork.
Exactly. You're the active agent. The software is passive. It just sits there and waits for you to drive it.
But after yesterday's news, specifically coming out of Mountain View, that model, it looks like it's officially dead. We're moving from an era of searching to an era of commanding.
And that's not just marketing fluff.
Not at all. We have Google Chrome morphing into a thinking agent. We have hardware physically mutating to handle this new power. And on the darker side, machines literally taking over financial markets.
It is a lot to get through. But the thread tying this all together, the thing I think we should keep in the back of our minds, is that artificial intelligence is graduating.
Hmm.
It's no longer just a chatbot sitting in a sidebar that you occasionally play with. It's becoming the operating system, the OS of our economy, our devices, and, you know, increasingly our daily habits.
So let's start with the big one, the piece of news that is going to impact arguably every single person listening, the Google Chrome update.
This is the story of the month, easily.
Yeah.
Google pushed a server-side update that basically upgrades Gemini from a simple chatbot into what they're calling the processing engine of the browser itself.
Right, and the marketing term they're using is personal intelligence, PI.
Personal intelligence. It sounds slick, very corporate.
It does. But let's strip away the branding. Usually a browser update means my tabs look a bit rounder, maybe something changes in the background. What does personal intelligence actually mean? What can I do today that I couldn't do yesterday?
It means the browser stops being a viewer and starts being a doer.
A doer, okay.
Until yesterday, Chrome just displayed websites. It didn't understand them. With PI, the browser has permissioned local access to your open tabs, your history, your emails, even PDFs. And crucially, it connects the dots between them.
Without you having to copy and paste a single thing.
Not a thing.
Okay, so it has context. That's the key word. But give me the aha moment. I want the practical application that changes my Tuesday morning.
The use case Google is highlighting, and the one that made my jaw drop a little, is the travel agent scenario.
Ah, the multi-tab struggle. I know it well.
We all do. You've got your email invite, your calendar, a flight search, a hotel map. It's a mess.
It's the alt-tab dance. You're checking the time on the email, switching to the calendar, switching back to the flight search. It's pure friction.
Pure friction.
Right.
With PI, you stay on one screen. You type a command into the address bar, not a search, a command.
Yeah.
You say, based on the invite email for the Dubai conference, find a flight and book a hotel near the venue.
That is a lot of trust to place in a prompt. So what's actually happening there? It's reading the specific email.
It scans your Gmail for invite and Dubai. It reads the email to get the dates, the location, the start times. Then it cross-references your Google Calendar to make sure you're free.
Okay.
It queries Google Flights for options. And then, this is the kicker, it navigates the booking flow. It fills out the forms, selects your seats, puts in your frequent flyer number, all the way up to the confirm payment button.
So it's not a search engine anymore. It's an executive assistant.
It's an agent. And that distinction really matters. A tool waits for you. An agent acts on your behalf.
But this immediately raises the red flag. I can just hear the privacy advocates screaming right now. If Chrome is reading my emails and checking my calendar, where is all that data going?
This is the most critical part. And to their credit, Google saw this backlash coming a mile away. They released a technical white paper detailing what they call a hybrid architecture.
Hybrid. So some here, some there.
Precisely. It's a split compute model.
Hmm.
For simple tasks, like summarizing an article you're reading, that happens on device. It uses the NPU, the neural processing unit, in your laptop or phone. That data never leaves.
Okay, that's reassuring. But the flight booking, that's heavy lifting. That needs external data.
Correct. For complex stuff like that where it needs logic and pricing, the data is encrypted and sent to Google's Cloud Tensor cores.
So my data is still leaving the building.
It is. Now, Google claims the encryption is end-to-end and the cloud instances are stateless, meaning they process the request and immediately forget it.
But you're still giving the world's biggest advertising company deep access to your financial forms, your private emails, your travel habits. your digital soul, basically.
It's the ultimate trade-off. Massive convenience for massive intimacy.
Is there an off switch?
There is, and this is important. For anyone not comfortable, they've added a hardware-level kill switch in the settings. You can toggle personal intelligence off completely, and Chrome just goes back to being a dumb browser.
A necessary safety valve. But I want to talk about performance. Because if my browser is suddenly thinking, that has to be heavy. Chrome was already a RAM hog.
And that brings us to the controversy of the morning. Google's claim is that they're using a new Nano model with advanced compression. They say it only reserves about 500 megabytes of RAM.
Which today sounds like nothing.
On paper, yes. But the real-world tests are telling a different story. The subreddit Hardware has been benchmarking it all morning. Users are reporting that when PI is really engaged, you know, reading multiple tabs to synthesize info, RAM usage isn't 500 megs. It's spiking by up to 2 gigabytes.
2 gigs, just for the browser to think.
Yes. If you have a high-end machine with 32 or 64 gigs of RAM, you won't even notice. But think about the average user, the student with an 8-gig MacBook Air.
It kills the machine.
It throttles everything. System slowdowns, battery drain, heat. Your browser is smarter, but your computer is functionally slower. It's creating a new kind of digital divide.
You know, this friction between software ambition and hardware reality is a perfect segue. Because while software is getting smarter, our hardware is getting, well, bigger.
You're talking about the Samsung leaks.
The Galaxy S26 Ultra. We saw those photos from the Spijian production line. And I have to say, as someone who appreciates design, what are they doing?
It's a bold choice, let's say that.
We've had 3 years of that clean, minimalist, floating lens design. It looked great. And now they've just slapped this massive unified brick on the back of the phone.
The camera island is back.
Yeah.
But it's more like a camera continent. It's thick, it's metal, and it takes up nearly a third of the back panel.
But why? Why the regression? It looks, frankly, ugly.
Because you can't cheat physics. The leaks confirm the S26 Ultra is using a new 1-inch ISOCELL sensor.
A 1-inch sensor in a phone? That's huge. That's basically a compact camera.
Exactly. And that needs physical depth. But the real reason for the brick design is the new variable liquid lens.
Liquid lens? That sounds like sci-fi.
It's fascinating tech. Instead of separate cameras for 3x and 10x zoom, they have one lens with a fluid chamber. They apply voltage. It changes the shape of the liquid, and that adjusts the magnification optically.
So there are moving fluid parts inside the camera.
Right, and moving parts create vibration. The analysts are saying the old floating lens design just wasn't rigid enough. The weight of the glass and the liquid would risk OIS failure. They needed a solid metal frame to clamp it all down.
So they sacrificed the aesthetic for the optic.
That's the verdict. It's no longer really a smartphone, it's a connected camera.
It really highlights how physical this whole digital revolution is. And speaking of invisible infrastructure, let's talk Asus. They launched something that ties right back into this personal intelligence theme, but for your Wi-Fi.
The ROG Rapture series, the debut of Wi-Fi 8 consumer hardware.
I feel like we just got Wi-Fi 7.
Tech moves fast. But the speed isn't the real headline here. It's the chipset. Asus has put a dedicated MPU inside the router.
Another AI chip. In a router? Why does my router need a brain?
It needs a brain to manage traffic. This MPU scans your data packets in real time. It does what they call deep packet inspection on the fly to identify exactly what application is generating the traffic.
Doesn't quality of service already do that?
QS is usually rule-based. It's static. This is behavioral. The AI recognizes the specific data signature of, say, the game code Vein 2 versus a Netflix stream.
And what does it do with that info?
The use case they're touting is the dedicated tunnel. Wi-Fi 8 uses the 60 gigahertz band. It's super fast, almost zero latency. If the router sees you are gaming, it autonomously opens a dedicated 60 gigahertz connection just for you.
So I get the fast lane.
Get the laser lane.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it shoves your roommate's 8K video stream onto a different band. It balances traffic dynamically, millisecond by millisecond, to keep your ping in the single digits.
See, that's that command versus configuration thing again. I don't have to log in and set priorities, and the machine just handles it.
It handles it. But this is where we have to pivot. Because so far, we've talked about AI helping us. But what happens when these agents start talking to each other, not to help us, but to beat us?
You're talking about the crypto market crash.
The bloody market, as they're calling it. Ethereum took a nosedive today, down to $2,790. It smashed right through that psychological $2,800 support level.
Now, crypto crashes happen all the time, but you're saying the mechanism of this crash was different. This wasn't just people panic selling.
The on-chain data is fascinating. A sell-off is usually triggered by news or by human whales getting spooked.
Yeah.
This time, the selling came from wallets identified as AI arbitrage agents.
AI arbitrage agents. Let's unpack that.
These are autonomous bots. They run 24/7. They detected a tiny efficiency gap. They saw declining activity on Ethereum's networks and, at the same time, rising fees and activity on Solana.
So they spotted a trend before a human could even refresh a web page.
Before a human could blink. The algorithms calculated that capital was more efficient on Solana, so they autonomously executed a rotation, a massive one.
So it wasn't a human looking at a chart saying, I'm losing confidence. It was a Python script saying, efficiency is down 0.5%.
Exactly. And because these bots use similar logic, what we call swarm intelligence, once one started selling, the others detected the volume and joined in. It cascaded. The market is being dictated by code, not sentiment.
That is terrifying for the average trader. You're not trading against other people anymore. You're trading against a hive mind.
That's the new reality. And just to touch on the technicals, the RSI is at 28.
Relative strength index.
Right. Anything under 30 is considered oversold. So technically, a bounce is coming. A dead cat bounce, as they say.
Grim term.
It is. But the lesson remains. The initial move was entirely machine-driven.
This idea of machines driving the market connects directly to what's happening on YouTube, the dead internet theory. We've talked about this before, but today it feels less like a theory and more like a status report.
Oh, it's a huge cultural moment. The hashtag #FixYouTube is trending. You have huge creators like MKBHD speaking out. The homepage is broken.
And it's broken because of what's being called AI slop.
Slop is the perfect word. We're talking videos where the script is from ChatGPT, the voice is 11 Labs, the thumbnail is Midjourney.
And it's not art. It's filler.
It's worse than filler. It's camouflage. These bots churn out thousands of videos a day targeting high-value search terms. They just flood the zone.
So when I search for something, I have to wade through 10 AI videos to find one made by a human.
Exactly. And because there's so much volume, they game the recommendation algorithm, so it pushes more of it. It's reinforcing the theory bots, creating content for other bots to index, while humans are pushed to the margins.
That is just incredibly dystopian. AI agents crashing the economy and AI agents ruining our entertainment.
It's the dark side of the machine economy. It prioritizes efficiency over humanity.
Well, speaking of humanity, let's talk about a very human experience. Disappointment.
Ah, the gaming launch.
Code Vein 2. The anime Souls-like everyone has been waiting 5 years for. It launched today.
Oh,
and it's almost a tradition at this point, isn't it?
It is. Error 3002. Connectivity failure. Can't log in. Bandai Namco said traffic was 300% higher than their beta estimates.
300%? How do you miss the mark that badly?
You'd think their predictive models would be better, but the irony is just so rich. We just talked about ASUS routers using AI to optimize traffic, but the game server on the other end is dead.
It doesn't matter how fast your tunnel is if the destination is closed.
Precisely. And for the people who did get in, performance is a mess. It's on Unreal Engine 5, and it's stunning. But we're seeing huge frame drops, especially on new NVIDIA 40 series cards.
So even with the best gear, it's not optimized.
It's another release now, patch later situation. And it just feels so frustrating on a day when we're talking about how smart our tech is.
Yeah.
Your browser can book a flight to Dubai, but we can't get a login screen to work.
It's a reality check. The underlying infrastructure is still fragile. So let's zoom out. We've covered Chrome agents, brick-sized cameras, AI routers, crypto bots, broken games. What's the big picture?
The line between tool and agent has completely blurred. Chrome isn't just a tool anymore. It's an agent acting on your behalf. The ASUS router isn't a pipe. It's a traffic cop.
And we are just kind of living in the middle of it.
We are. The personal intelligence era has begun. The tech is proactive now. It doesn't wait for you.
So here's a thought to leave you with. We talked about Chrome booking that flight. If we get used to the browser doing the searching and the booking and the planning, do we eventually lose the ability to navigate these things ourselves?
That's the real danger. Not Skynet, but dependency, atrophy. If the AI handles the logistics, you might forget how to drive.
And can we truly trust that nano model on our device with the intimacy of our personal emails? Or are we trading privacy for a little bit of magic?
A question worth asking before you click update.
Indeed. While servers may crash and designs might get ugly, the machines are definitely taking the wheel. Thanks for diving in with us.
Always a pleasure.
See you next time.